Tonight I want to talk about something called resolve. And I'm going to start by reading this line from the Dhammapada. This is verse 290 of the Dhammapada. If you see a greater happiness that comes from forsaking a lesser happiness, be willing to forsake the lesser happiness for the sake of the greater one. Pretty good advice. Right? If you see a greater happiness that comes from forsaking a lesser happiness, be willing to forsake the lesser happiness for the sake of the greater one. So, resolve is actually fits into one traditional teaching in the Theravada Buddhist world. And that's something called the 10 paramis, or the 10 perfections of the heart. And I'll talk more about that as we go on, but I want to just talk about resolve in the general sense first. And I also want to mention that, of course, this is the time of year when we think about resolve. I mean, it's like, New Year's is coming, we're going to start a new year. What am I going to do next year? That sort of thing. And basically, I want to start by saying that everyone has good intentions, right? We all have good intentions. It's like, oh, I want to do more. I want to do this. I want to do that. But resolve is sort of the energy, the mental energy that translates intention into actually doing something. It's the thing that makes intentions into action. And like I said, we all have good intentions. We want to, plan to practice more, study more, help others more. But just thinking about these things, imagining what it would be like to actually do these things, doesn't actually do much good. I mean, you have to form intention before anything happens. Yes, that's absolutely true. But if you don't then follow through those intentions with action, you're not getting very far along the road. And basically this resolve requires effort. It requires determination. I looked up resolve in the dictionary, which I like to do because this often you get some interesting things there. So one of the definitions of resolve is to reach a firm decision about. The key word here is firm. So there's no maybe. There's no, well, if I find the time, you're going to do this. You're going to do this. You've made a firm decision. Now, my dad had this great expression he used to use all the time when he was talking about this sort of thing. He'd say, he was going to do it come hell or high water. It's like, that's it. I'm going to do it. Nothing's going to stop me. And so, to bring resolve into your life, it's often wise to start with something quite small. And I'll talk a lot more about things you can resolve and how you can use resolve in your practice. But just in general, it's good to not sort of, start out by resolving to do some enormous thing. Start with something small. And say, I'm going to, make sure I, sit for 20 minutes every day. I mean, and maybe for some of you that's going to be really easy, but whatever. You see what I'm going here. So you make the resolve. It's a formal thing. You make this resolve. You choose to make the resolve, and then you stick with it. You really, okay, now I'm going to actually do this. And the important thing about about making a resolve is it takes your practice to a little deeper, a little more effort involved than what's been going on up until now. I mean, you could, and so it has to be something wholesome and positive. I mean, resolve could be, something. I mean, you could resolve, oh, I'm just going to sleep in every day and never sit again. You could make that resolve, but it wouldn't be a particularly wholesome resolve to make, right? It's like, so, and it wouldn't be worthwhile. Maybe you get more sleep, right? But it's like, you have to, so you have to think about it in the context of, what does this mean in terms of my practice? And the other thing about resolve is, it's, you're taking sort of the long-term view. It's not like, I'm going to practice today, which in it could be a resolve, a miniature resolve, like you're sitting there, oh, should I practice or not practice? And no, I'm going to make a resolve right now. I'm going to go practice. That could be wholesome, but it tends to be, resolves tend to be more long-term. It's more like, I'm going to practice for the rest of my life. That's resolve. I'm going to practice for the rest of my life. This is, I've chosen this form, and I'm going to now stick with it. And you do that because you clearly see that the more you practice, the more you dedicate your life to practice, the less you suffer, and the less those around you suffer. It's, there's a direct relationship between resolve and reducing the amount of suffering you experience and the amount of suffering those around you experience. I want to read a few things here. This is from Joseph Goldstein's book, Mindfulness. And this is something he calls a spiritual urgency. And I think it's quite apropos to what we're talking about. And he's talking about the word virya, which is energy, or sometimes it's called, translated as effort. The proximate cause for the arising of virya is a feeling of spiritual urgency. The Buddha talked of attending to these awakening factors as a matter of vital concern, not simply as something to do in your off hours. There are some powerful reflections that remind us of this urgency. We can reflect on the preciousness of our present circumstances. Whether we think of it in the context of many lives or just in this life, we can see and appreciate how rare it is for all the conditions to come together in order for us to hear the Dhamma, and even more so for us to have the interest, motivation, and opportunity to practice. We often think that conditions will be favorable, but any look at the world around us reveals the truth of uncertainty. From war and violence to natural disasters to our own aging bodies. Wise reflection on the uncertainty of conditions heightens the appreciation of our present circumstances and thus becomes the cause for the arousal of energy. This is like, especially in our culture and in the Western culture, but in this country too, I think. We have no idea sometimes, if we don't really reflect on it, how incredibly fortunate we are. How lucky we are to live the lives we're leading, even if we struggle to sort of, keep it together. It's like, my God, here I am. I have so much free time. I can sit and listen to a Dharma talk. I have so much free time. I can actually practice on a regular basis. I have so much free time. I have time to study Dhamma. For a lot of the world, this is like not true at all. And then it's also, it's at this point in your life, you have a body and mind that's functioning and it allows you to do that. And that's not going to be true forever. In fact, it changes just like that. You never know when it's going to change. And that's that, and that brings on this idea of what Joseph calls spiritual urgency. It's like, oh, I don't know if I'm gonna be able to do this next year or the year after that. I can make resolves to it, I can plan to do it. Can you make wholesome plans, right? But you don't know. And so it sort of like spurs you to sort of do it right away. There's I was part of a spiritual organization called the Shivananda Yoga Vedanta Society at one time. Shivananda was a great saint in North India. Had a little hut in the on the Ganges, in Rishikesh, just outside Rishikesh, and he had a little sign over his door that was he was like a constant reminder, and it said all it said was DIN, and he said it meant do it now. Don't put it off for tomorrow. Don't put it off for oh when I have time. Do it now. That was he was constantly telling people over and over and over again, do it now. And as Joseph goes on here, reflecting on death is another powerful reminder to use the time of our lives in a way that benefits ourselves and others. Each day, life just gets shorter. Day by day, life is running out. Can we hold this truth in our awareness as a way of arousing spiritual urgency? Does it inspire us? Does it frighten us? The Buddha would often exhort the bhikkhus. There are trees and the roots of trees. Meditate now, lest you regret it later. We can also reflect on the end of all accumulation is dispersion, and look to see what we spend so much time accumulating. It might be wealth and possessions, or people and relationships, or projects and great works. Although all of these things might be of some benefit, the great Indian adept Shantideva reminds us, and fix this firmly in your understanding, all that may be wished for will by nature fade to nothing. I had a student who used to wear this t-shirt that said, the person with the who has the most toys when they die wins, which was basically a pretty good description of our culture. And it's like when you get to that point, what stuff you have is like pretty much immaterial. Pretty much, and when you die, obviously, you don't take anything with you. You can't, that old phrase, you can't take it with you, is very true. So, are we putting our energy there, accumulating stuff, or am I putting that same amount of energy into practice? And that's a question we have to ask ourselves. Anyhow, so that's Joseph on spiritual urgency and how to sort of think about it and urge yourself to practice more. At the same time, this is the opposite piece. We got to be careful about not like forcing things. I've seen people who say, that's it. I'm going to meditate 4 hours a day and eat one meal a day. And like they take this really strict set of resolves and force themselves to do it for a while. And then because they weren't ready for that deep a commitment, which was, I mean, that's what we're talking about, the commitment that like a monastic would make. They rebound the other way and they go wild. I mean, just wild in more ways than one I can think of people. Just so we have to sort of be aware. That's why I said we have to start with something simple. We don't want to sort of go too far back. And it's always okay if you've taken, a fairly big resolve and then you start to realize that just, man, this isn't working. Then it's okay. It's not like you're going, oh, well. Because we think of New Year's resolutions, right? It's like, well, I do it once a year. Well, no. So you take some resolves, and in middle of February, you realize you've bitten off more than you can chew. Then just redo the resolves. Realize, oh, if this might be a wise thing to do. Say, oh, maybe I need to sort of step back a little bit. Like, oh, I'm trying to force too much at once. So then the next question is, gee, this sounds sort of simple. I mean, just decide to, take this firm resolve. Why don't we do this? Why don't we do this regularly? Why do we have so many good ideas and plans with so little follow through? Mainly, we've become an expert at making excuses for not doing what you know you should do. We're all really good at making up excuses, you know. I'll do that when my work is a little less busy. I'll do that when my kids are older. I'll do that in the fall when I don't have to do so much outside. That was my favorite one for the garden time, right? And excuses like that are endless. We can just keep on making excuses over and over and over again for why we have the intention, but yeah, and we have to sort of see this excuse making habit and tame it. It's also partly because we create lives that are packed with activity. Once again, this is something our culture encourages us. Someone who says, "Oh boy, I'm really busy." You think, "Well, they must be important. They're so busy, right?" It's a cultural thing of like the more busy you are, the better person you are somehow or other. And then, so the idea of having unscheduled time to just sit or study, sort of it's very counter to our cultural idea of how things should be. There's always something important left undone, some book you were going to read, or some new garden project, or children or aging parents you have to take care of, or how can and you're going, how can I fit 20 minutes into my busy day? How can I fit another 20 minutes into that day that's already packed? And this is where we have to start taking things seriously. I have a couple of things to read from this wonderful book called Parami by Ajahn Susito. Ajahn Susito is the abbot of monastery, nunnery, retreat in England. And he has some very wise things to say here, I think. And he's talking about how this might not be as easy as we think it should be, and why. Resolve isn't a small matter. If you're looking for the best results or the deepest changes, you have to do that with the understanding this will most likely mean working at it and overcoming some resistance. And it will require the faith that you can at least try. Otherwise, you aren't going to grow. Naturally, you can develop strong degrees and a further extent of resolve in accordance with a wise assessment of what is needed or useful for you. For example, when you begin to meditate, you might start with 10 minutes and check out how that was. If you get interested, then you go to 50 minutes or half an hour or more. When you read a book, you don't start off thinking that you will read all day and all night, but rather you pick up a book and then you look at it for 10 minutes. Then if it's worthwhile, you continue. So wise resolve supports strengthening according to feedback, interest, and capacity. It is not blind doggedness. It does, however, mean that you put aside the alternatives and stay with your central aim. The end result is a stronger and more skillful mind, but it means getting over the first hurdle, the idea that lasting personal development can occur quickly with little effort. Frequently, we find ourselves presented with many options, so it's more likely that we will get exactly what we want. It sounds good, but the multi-option scenario can lead to option paralysis. You don't give due time and effort to change in yourself, and you get the ongoing sneaky feeling that if you've only done that or bought that one, it would have been better. So resolve comes late on the list of perfections, because to make a wise resolution requires a mind that is settled, practiced, and received the benefits of generosity, virtue, and the rest. So what he's talking about here, and this is quite interesting, in this list of 10 paramis, which is sort of like a sequential teaching, you start with, generosity and leading a wholesome life, and then you go through simple stages of, starting to practice and wisdom and these things, honesty. And resolve comes in that list right near the end, when you'd think it would be at the beginning. But what he's saying is to do, be wise as you take resolves. You have to have some sort of like grounding in the practice to start with. You have to understand where you're at now, and then go, ah, now I understand where I am now. So now I can, and to understand where you are now, you have to have practiced and looked at it quite seriously. It's an interesting thing to think about. And this is, you know, I wanted to go back to that quote. So when we're talking about finding the time to do more. And this is where right understanding needs to arise. This is right, you know, there we are, the first step in the Eightfold Path. Here we go again. You need to understand that the greater happiness that the Buddha spoke about in that quote from the Dhammapada is the most important thing. It's more important than anything else. You need to consciously let go of some of the lesser happiness to make space in your life for the practice. You have to make a firm resolve. No more excuses. That's amazingly, and I've found this in my life many times when I've sort of got to these places where I've been firm with myself. It always works out. Somehow or other, you make the resolve, and then what you thought, like, whoa, I'm really pushing my edges here, it all works out. It always does. It's like that. It's that. It's the making of the resolve that pushes that process into action. And all those things you thought that were going to be in the way just fall away. And you find more time, you find how to do it more. I'm going to read another bit more from Ajahn Sasito here. And he's talking about another interesting problem with practice and how we think about practice. And I think this is, it's a very interesting thing he's saying here. When we first come to Buddhist practice, we may feel it's about freedom from commitment, that liberation is about openness, spontaneity, and being with the moment, which it is. The idea of being boundless and free is attractive, and we can assume this comes around through not having any commitments or aims. People may think, don't tie me down, I'm a Buddhist. I want to be completely open. I want to feel free and to follow my intuitions. We sometimes get people like coming to the monastery and remonstrating with us, saying that our Buddhism isn't really up to much because we have these petty rules and restrictions rather than being free, boundless, and cosmic. We're stuck in the narrow little Theravada ways, such as, please don't point your feet at the Buddha image. It's actually quite a very serious thing for in ashrams. Please don't point your feet at the Buddha image. It's disrespectful. It sounds like school again. This is why our times are sometimes called the Dhamma ending age, because it's hard to get across some of these teachings in a society that has turned the precious qualities of motivation, respect, and resolve towards material ends and towards beliefs that don't go that far. This is quite understandable to feel, I've had enough of being controlled and driven. Freedom is the opposite from obeying rules and making effort. This is another common, quote, spiritual belief you encounter. You'll meet lots of people like this in Boulder if you look very far. Where it's like, no, I just have to be free and spontaneous and, you know, don't tie me down with, you know, anything serious. And taking resolves is like, it's like, oh, now I've added something to my schedule. I have a schedule. Oh, no. Right? People get very uptight about that sometimes. I have this discussion with them, but it's true. We can't, you can't be free and easy, because then nothing solid ever happens. You're just sort of flitting from one thing to the next and not deeply paying attention to what's actually worthwhile. And that's what Ajahn Sasito is getting to here, of course. There's this one more idea to consider about resolve in terms of philosophical, psychological thoughts. And what does it mean to have complete resolve? What would complete resolve even look like? Yeah. To dedicate your entire life to the practice. What would that look like? In Theravada cultures, the answer is simple. Complete resolve means taking vows and becoming a monastic. But as the teachings have come to the West, both the teachers and the practitioners are now primarily householders. There are monasteries. There's two I know of in North America and one I know of in England. That's for how many people who live in the West? It's like this tiny little percentage. And as householders, we have jobs and families and responsibilities to our communities and all those other things that go along with being a householder, not a renunciate. So how do we express, how do we connect to this idea of complete resolve? What does that mean as to us as householders? And to be honest with you, for me, this is a really open question. It's like it goes directly back to that quote I gave from the Dhammapada about if you see a greater happiness, you have to let go of some of the lesser happiness. So I look at my life and I see what I've given up. So I have given things up to be what I do, what I do, and teach and study as much as I do. I don't go on a conventional vacation, other than maybe for a weekend, for years. I mean, literally, probably 20, well, 15 years. I went to Mexico with my wife for a week about 15 years ago. It's just, if I have that amount of time, I want to do something concrete with it. And so it's like, yes, it's nice. I mean, I would, there's part of me that would go, oh, would I ever like to go back to Europe? I lived in Europe as a child, and then I've been back once, well, 30 years ago now. But being an artist, it'd be nice just to go to all those great museums and just sort of, spend a day in the Prado and a day in the Louvre and a day in the Quai d'Orsay, and like all these amazing places I could go and just look at art and take it in. But I don't do that anymore. And it's a matter of if I get a big chunk of time, and this was more true when I was a bit younger than I am now. But when I got big chunks of time, instead of going on vacation, I'd go sit for a month or 6 weeks. I'd go on retreat. That's what was more important than going and bathing myself in the art in the Prado, which I would still love to do, but I can look at books and look online and get some of it that way. And it's just that it was like simply this, I could see what the greater happiness was. And that was to go deeper into the practice. That was what was more important than anything else. But do I have complete resolve? I don't think so. I don't think so at all. I think for householders, the practice is more small steps. I would also, I think I'd make a terrible renunciate. I'd make a terrible monk. It's not my nature to do something that extreme. So we take all these little small steps. We take resolve and we take small steps and small steps and small steps and a bit more and a bit more. And I've definitely taken some small steps, it's a work in progress, as they say, right? So this is all sounds nice. This is an interesting thing I've been saying, but how do I actually put this into practice? It's New Year's, right? It's New Year's times for New Year's resolutions, right? It's like, which is why I give this talk around this time of year, because this is when people traditionally think about, oh, I have to, next year's coming, and what am I going to do next year? And so here I have some suggestions for you, that things you could make resolutions about, and then I'll talk about the actual process of doing this, because there can be some quite formal ways to make resolutions. The first one, and the one at the top of my list, is daily practice. I resolved to actually have a daily practice, which for some people is a difficult leap, but that's something you can resolve to do. Or if you have one, then resolve to up the ante a little bit. If you're sitting for 30 minutes every day, say, maybe I shall start sitting for 40 minutes. Might mean I have to get up 10 minutes earlier. Because if you're like me, you practice in the morning, and at a certain point in the morning, then life is getting busy out there, and you have to do stuff. So it means you have to get up a bit earlier, which means you have to go to bed a little earlier. It's like, oh, here's all these, I have to give up these lesser happinesses for the greater happiness. But it's like we have to like think about our practice, our formal practice, and decide, let's just do a little more. Don't, like I say, go from 30 minutes to 4 hours a day. It's unrealistic. Find small little pieces. And then I think study is another thing you can resolve. You resolve to have a regular time to study. Like actually, it's not something you do when you have time, but it's actually studying. It means not, making sure you attend Sangha. Or if you don't have time that particular week, because you have jobs and lives, I understand, then to make sure you listen to the Dharma talk that was recorded for that week. So every week you're getting that nourishment without fail. You keep doing it and doing it. And even to have a daily study period every day, even if it's just like for 10 minutes every day, maybe before you sit, you study for 10 minutes and then you sit. Because the study sort of generates that energy of practice in a sense. Or all you could do all those things. Right? And then you should make a resolve to go on retreat. This practice has these phases. It's like there's daily practice, there's practice in the world, which I'm going to talk about in a minute, and then there's retreat. And retreat is an extremely important part of this practice. It allows us to go deeper than just our daily practice. Daily practice is wonderful, it's essential. I think a daily practice is, putting gas in your car to keep the car going. Retreat is like, especially like a day-long retreat, is like, oh, I really need an oil change too. I gotta do a little more to maintain. And then if you go on a long retreat, it's like getting an engine overhaul, but that's a separate. But it's like, if you've never been on a day-long retreat, go on a day-long retreat. If you've been on a day-long retreat or a weekend retreat, then think, maybe I should go for a week-long retreat. I should go a little more. Once again, find that edge and push that edge a little bit. See what happens. It's like it's something we can take. It's time we, like all these other things I'm talking about, sort of, as I said, we're upping the ante. We're making it a little more, And finally, in the world, I think the most important thing we can resolve to do is to find some way of being doing service in the world. Find some place that suits your nature and your schedule and your energy and your time and your interests, and volunteer. Consciously choose to give up some of your precious time, because in our culture, time is sometimes the most precious commodity we have. Give up some of that precious time and go and do something in the community around you that really needs to be done. I'm telling you, if you go, you Google volunteer opportunities in Boulder or wherever you are, you'll be astounded by the number of different opportunities there are. And it could be like, I know people who go to the animal shelter once a week and take dogs out for walks. What a great service to those poor beings that are locked up there. Just doing that. But it's like it's endless. I mean, really endless. If you start thinking about it, and just it's like this is something I can do that's helps my community, is useful in the world, and it is a very spiritual practice to sort of give up something and give it away. Give away your time to help the world be a better place. So these are all different things you can think about that you might want to make resolves on. I'm not saying you should make resolves on any of them or all of them or some subset of them. Everybody has to figure this out for themselves, right? But now we get to the interesting part. How do I, often, I don't know if you've been through this thing of like making New Year's resolutions and then sort of the middle of January, early February, it's like, what resolutions? I don't even know. So when I was at one point I had it was my teacher's name was Swami Vishnudevananda, and we used to get together with him at New Year's, which was we would celebrate his birthday, and he would always, and this was like a big thing with him, was to take what he called spiritual resolves. And what he encouraged us to do, which was really interesting and quite effective, was to write them down. Actually, write down the actual act of writing things down makes them much more real than if you just sort of think about it. Once you've written it down, I mean, you can even write it down and make it look like a little contract and sign it if that works for you. But it's like now you've actually made it concrete. Writing it down makes resolves concrete. Yeah, because now you can't go at the beginning of February, oh, I didn't really, no, I didn't think that much. Because there it is, it's all written down. You can post it on your fridge and you see it every day or whatever. It's like something that's like, oh, yeah, I actually didn't say that. Yeah, it's like also, and this is once again, I haven't done this in a long time, but for a while I did this when I was a student. And sometimes after that, he used to keep what he called the spiritual diary. All you did was you'd made the resolves to do something on a daily or weekly basis. And then you literally make a, have a little, like, a, I suppose now you can be a spiritual spreadsheet. You just sort of note, yep, did my sit today. Yep. Did my study period. Yep. Went to the weekly sangha. Yep. Tick, 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 tick. And keep track. It's once again, it's incentive. It's like, oh, yeah, it's like right here in black and white, or maybe blue and white on your screen or whatever, But it's like, it makes it, once again, it makes it more real. It makes it more concrete to actually keep track. And understand that, especially because we're making resolves that are sort of out there at our edge. It's no sense making resolves for that I'm, I can make a resolve, oh, I'm not going to smoke next year. Well, I'll tell you, I haven't smoked in like 40 years, so I'm pretty sure that would be a pretty easy resolve to keep, right? So no sense making resolves you're going to that are easy. You have to make resolves that sort of push the edge just a little bit beyond that forward edge of things. And then understand that some days, you're gonna look at that spreadsheet and that little tick mark isn't gonna be there for whatever reason. And then you have to go, okay, time to make the resolve again. And then start again. That's the hardest thing to understand about practice, I think, is that you can always start again and again and again. And that's the nature of practice, is that we're always starting again. Always starting again. It's just how things are. And it's like, we have to not think of it as a failure. That's why we call it practice, because practice means sometimes we're not going to be perfect, right? We're not calling it perfection, we're calling it practice. Because we're practicing, we're trying to get something that works. And so we're going to struggle, and you're going to get it. And just the thing is, just remember the original wholesome intention. Really important that you sort of contemplate, why did I make this resolve in the first place? Oh yeah, I want to deepen my practice and spend a little more time and practice more. That's a wholesome intention. Remember that and then resolve to start again. And that's what'll keep you going for the rest of your life. So we have to find time to practice. We have to make a firm resolve to practice a little bit more. And I have a little note here. You'll be surprised how easy it is once you actually do it. It sounds like somehow monumental. Oh my God, he wants to, this is like serious. But once you actually do it, it's like, wow. This actually worked. This is kind of nice to have this time to practice, It's a different feeling that just arises from deepening your practice. And one more thing to do here, and I didn't put my bookmark in. I think I probably read this poem. You've probably heard me read this poem, but it's so apropos to what I've been talking about. It's called Awakening Now. It's by Dana Falls. It says, "Why wait for your awakening? The moment your eyes are open, seize the day. Would you hold back when the beloved beckons? Would you deliver your litany of sins like a child's collection of seashells, prized and labeled? No, I can't step over the threshold, you say, eyes downcast. I'm not worthy. I'm afraid, and my motives aren't pure. I'm not perfect, and surely I haven't practiced nearly enough. My meditation isn't deep, and my prayers are sometimes insincere. I still chew my fingernails, and the refrigerator isn't clean. Do not value your reasons for staying small more than the light shining through the open door. Forgive yourself. Now is the only time you have to be whole. Now is the sole moment that exists to live in the light of your true self. Perfection is not a prerequisite for anything but pain. Please, oh please, don't continue to believe in your disbelief. This is the day of your awakening." And the key line here, I think, is perfection is not a prerequisite for anything but pain. It's so easy to get caught up in this perfectionist idea that you're going to be the perfect yogi and everything's going to be wonderful all the time. Nothing but pain. It's a brilliant statement, I think. So that's all I have to share with tonight.